Thank you, Lynn. And hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. Now, the last 4 days, some of us girls have taken our doggies, and we went for a girls and doggies weekend in the heart of Colorado. We went to Winter Park, Colorado, and we did a lot of hiking because, you know, that's the kind of vacation doggies like. No, we did not get wet. It did not rain on us once, so we were very lucky. And it was very, very beautiful, you know, because it was such a wonderful winter and it has been a wetter summer. There were a bazillion more wildflowers than usual. So it was incredibly beautiful. Jacqueline Eckert joined us. She drove from Indiana to come and be with us. And then she's now staying here in Pueblo until she knows what's happening next. but we had a really, really wonderful time. But we're home now. And, you know, I've observed my dog. She seems so happy to be back in her familiar space, although she did very well. And Danielle's dog also did very well on the trip. Jamie just seems so happy to be back in her space. And I'm happy to be back as well. Of course, I was also happy to be there and happy to be driving home. My schedule for tonight, I'm going to be sharing now from the Seven Steps to Awakening. And then I'll be leaving the sanctuary to go to an Awakening Together board meeting. And then after the board meeting, I should be back in the sanctuary at 10 p.m. to lead the contemplation. However, Lynn, if I don't show up, that means the board meeting has gone over. So that would be my reason for not showing up. But based on the agenda, I don't have that expectation tonight. I have the expectation that the meeting should be able to finish within an hour and a half and that I should be here. But you never know. I could be wrong. So that's my schedule for this evening. What I'd like to do before I begin sharing from the Seven Steps to Awakening is take a little moment of silence, but I think we'll go ahead and just take that little moment of silence to music. So there will be something playing over the mic. And I'm going to play this song. I've played it a few times before. It's just a lovely, short, little song, music only. It's called Harp Meditation. So why don't we listen to this and just have a little bit of silence. Song. So tonight I will be reading from the Seven Steps to Awakening, beginning with quote number 565, which comes from Sri Sadhu Om. And then, of course, I'll be reading from my journal as well. So let me go ahead and give you the link to my journal at number 565. So that link is in pasted in the room for anyone who wants to join me in the journal. Also, if you're listening on the radio and you want to join me in the journal, you can go to RDA7, and that is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the website, you just click on Step 3 from the menu bar across the top. And then select the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 565, because that is where we're beginning tonight. And I am going to read from the Seven Steps to Awakening first, starting with quote number 565 by Sri Sadhu Om. The happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of mind, is eternal. It is the supreme bliss. Again, that quote is, the happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of the mind, is eternal. It is the supreme bliss. So I'll read from my journal now. Happiness is natural. Call it the eternal gift of God. Mind, made by the idea to create something different than the eternal, generates the experience of unhappy. Unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind. Happiness is the eternal gift of God. Get rid of mind and know always present joy. And I think probably the two lines that right now, in this moment, that I love the most about this particular journal entry are these. Unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind. Happiness is the eternal gift of God. I was recently talking to someone who is not happy, does not know happiness, and in fact appears to suffer quite a bit with his ideas and with his experience of life. And when I talked to him, what I discovered was he kind of, not, I don't know what I'm saying kind of, strike kind of out of my sentence. He expected prior to our conversation, expected unhappiness to last throughout this lifetime. That was the expectation, as if unhappiness is eternal. Unhappiness is a fact. And, you know, again, this journal entry says, unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind. You know, when he was sharing with me the circumstances of his life, you know, I could see that they were, you know, difficult circumstances. But I told him that, you know, one thing we can always count on is that life changes. Everything changes all of the time. And the circumstances that are present for him right now are not going to always be present. In fact, it'll probably begin changing, you know, quite soon. And that having this expectation that it's always going to be unhappy, or this expectation that I can never be happy, that expectation itself is going to block the ability to notice how changing circumstances are kind of opening up the opportunity to realize happiness. You know, and he's not the first one that I've spoken to who seems to think that the suffering is permanent, the unhappiness is permanent, the sense of unworthiness is permanent, the I am bad thought is permanent. And of course, if we hold on to an idea like that, like if I hold on to the idea I am bad, and that's a permanent truth about me, as long as I hold on to it, it is going to seem to stay in place. It will appear to be permanent as long as I hold on to it. But if I start practicing releasing ideas like I am bad, releasing ideas like I can't be happy in this world, releasing ideas, you know, that seem to keep me in a sense of suffering or misery, what eventually happens is I come to notice that every circumstance of unhappiness is temporary, and the only thing that can be permanent is joy. And as I realize this more and more, then whenever a circumstance of unhappiness or a situation of unhappiness arises, what I start doing is I start quickly looking at my mind to see what idea I am holding on to that is causing me to experience this in an unhappy way. You know, why am I being temporarily unhappy when I don't have to, when happiness is the only thing that's permanent? So what am I doing with my mind now that is creating this temporary unhappiness now? And as I go in and look for the idea that I'm holding on to, those ideas are not hard to see, actually, if we just look for them. And when I look for the idea that is causing this temporary experience of unhappiness and then just realize I'd rather be happy than hold on to this idea, I can release the idea and happiness returns. And as we practice this more and more and more, I call this practice purification. As we practice this more and more and more, what happens at some point is that natural happiness that is permanent begins to become a genuine part of our experience. And in fact, at some point we realize it never was the circumstances of our life. We realize that no matter what the circumstances are, no matter how challenging the moment may appear to be, no matter what kind of a problem is there that needs to be resolved, the happiness can always be there too. There's a constant joy that is extremely natural, that can always be present no matter what we face. But in order to realize this genuine happiness, what most of us have to do first is realize the ideas that we cling to that keeps us from experiencing this permanent happiness, because we're experiencing the impermanent unhappiness instead through our clinging to ideas. So again, Sadhu Om said, "The happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of the mind, is eternal. It is the supreme bliss." And the journal entry says, "Happiness is natural. Call it the eternal gift of God. Mind, made by the idea to create something different than the eternal, generates the experience of unhappy. Unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind." We could also say generated by thought, generated by ideas. And if it wasn't for those ideas, I could not be unhappy. That's the amazing miracle. If it was not for the ideas I cling to, I could not be unhappy. Imagine that. Unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind. Happiness is the eternal gift of God. Get rid of mind. Or another way to say, that's kind of a humorous statement in my journal. So I'm smiling even as I read it. Get rid of mind. But said again, you know, another way to say that would be, you know, go through this purification process. Notice which ideas are generating your temporary experiences of unhappy and let go of those ideas. Every time you let go of idea, it's the same as letting go of mind, because mind is nothing but, mind is nothing but a collection of thoughts or ideas. So every time you let go of an idea, you let go of mind, right? So get rid of mind by noticing what is causing you to feel unhappy and realizing that you want happiness more than this idea and letting go of the idea. It very much reminds me of A Course in Miracles. To say you want the peace of God is nothing, to mean it is everything. And when you're willing to look for the idea that's causing the current circumstance of unhappiness, and you're willing to let go of that idea, you're letting go of mind, and happiness is what you realize. Last night we watched a movie. In my personal opinion, not a very good movie. Although it actually gave me a lot to contemplate, so in that way, it was good. The name of the movie was Transcendence. And in the movie, there was this one scene where the female, she was the girlfriend of the genius who died. Or maybe the wife. I think she was the wife of the genius who died. And when this genius died, his consciousness was uploaded into a computer so that his consciousness continued to exist through the computer. And so one day he made a comment to her. Now, he's the consciousness in the computer now. And he made a comment to her about, you know, her hormones being kind of out of whack. You know, because she wasn't very happy that day. And, you know, this made her even a little madder, you know, and she wanted to see, what is it that you're watching in me? You know, what is it that you're scanning me for? Show me now, show me now. And so he showed her how he was just watching, you know, everything about her. He was able to see, you know, when her body temperature raised and went down, and he's just watching everything about her and was very aware of everything that was going on with her. And she got very angry at him. And she said, these are my feelings. You know, and you know, she felt like she was somehow invaded by him being so aware of what was going on with her emotionally. And, you know, these are my feelings. And that line was one of the lines that really jumped out at me in the movie. You know, how many of us hold on to our anger, hold on to our hurt, hold on to our whatever, because it's mine. It makes me. I remember when I was in my relationship with Laurent, you know, Laurent and I had very little in common. The only thing that we had in common was our willingness to awaken, but all of the aspects of form were very, very different between us. And so there was always what you could call a value clash. Were we going to do things my way or were we going to do things his way? And this was not a minor value clash. It was very, very strong, very, very big. There was a lot of emotion involved. And I remember every friggin' time I went within to ask Spirit, Spirit always encouraged me to let go of my value. Every time. It wasn't like Spirit was like a marriage counselor or a relationship counselor saying, okay, this time do it your way, next time do it his way. Every time Spirit told me to let go of my value. And I remember at some point I just felt like there's not going to be any me left. And as soon as I said that, I realized, you know, that's the point. There's not going to be any me left. Isn't that what I said I wanted? Didn't I say I wanted to awaken? Another thing that I found interesting about the movie Transcendence last night was that this machine genius had the ability to heal people. Like in one of the scenes, there was a man who came to him who had been blind since birth, and he was able to hook up to the network consciousness. And he regained his sight. But he also remained hooked up to the network consciousness. And in fact, everyone that was healed by this network consciousness became a part of or an extension of the network consciousness. The way they described it, it was that they were able to act as individuals or act as a unified consciousness. And you know, these people who had been healed, which were now a part of the network consciousness, there was nothing in the film that they were doing that was bad. Like they weren't sinister and planning to take over the world or anything like that. In fact, they were putting up solar panels, very harmless type of things. But other people became very afraid of them and, in fact, assumed that this network consciousness was building an army. And when I contemplated that, and they thought it was very, very wrong that this network consciousness would extend itself into those that it healed. But if you watch the ones that were healed, they were happy. And, when I looked at that with the type of mind that I have, what I saw again was struggling for me, mine, my will, my individuality, my, me, my, just like these are my feelings, my. And people, the observers thought that individuality was the best treasure of all. And therefore, what this network was doing was evil. And it needed to be destroyed. And in fact, if you watch the movie, you'll see that when they destroyed it, they kind of destroyed it the way of life for everyone in the whole world. They were willing to destroy the way of life for everyone in the whole world in order to destroy this unified consciousness that was spreading in a very harmless way. Now, of course, the real theme of the movie is about artificial intelligence. Should artificial intelligence become more intelligent than man? Is that okay? But when I saw it through my mind, through my, my right mind showing the movie, what I saw is look at how much we value me, mine, my way. We say we want to awaken. We say we want to be a part of the unified consciousness that we call God. But are we willing to let go of me, mine, and my way? Or do we really value that more? That's a part of what I saw in the movie, a part of one of the unasked questions that the movie brings up. Again, Sadhu Om says, the happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of the mind, is eternal. It is the supreme bliss. So what is this mind that he is talking about that needs to be destroyed or needs to be let go of or released or no longer believed in? It's the personal mind. It's the me, the my way. Me, mine, my way. Me, mine, and my way promises us happiness. Right? The idea is, if I get my way, I will be happy, right? That y'all agree that's a common human thought. If I get my way, I will be happy. That's the promise of mind. But that doesn't lead to happiness. What leads to happiness, true happiness, eternal happiness, which is the gift of God and is our inheritance, is being willing to let go of me, mine, in my way, and literally plug in to universal consciousness and be moved by it. Be the non-doer, the no me, the no my way, let go of mind. Do not have the individual mind, the individual will. That is the way of happiness. And if you notice when you're unhappy, and you really look carefully, you're probably going to find a me, a mine, or a my way thought that is there, that's causing your unhappiness. I want him to act this way. I want to be able to have this. I want this to be different. Without these types of thoughts, it's impossible to be unhappy. Again, A Course in Miracles says, to say you want the peace of God is nothing. To mean it is everything. And the real question is, do I want the peace of God, that joy that is eternal? Or do I want me, mine, and my way? That's the choice. So again, get rid of mind and know always present joy. Happiness is natural. Call it the eternal gift of God. Mind, made by the idea to create something different than the eternal, generates the experience of unhappy. Unhappy is a temporary experience generated by mind. Happiness is the eternal gift of God. Get rid of mind. Let go of me, mine, and my way. And know always present joy. And with that said, I'm going to move on to 566. So if you're in the journal with me, you can scroll underneath the comment and reply area, and that will take you to 566 when you click on the little 566, or Lynn has posted the 566 link right here in the room. Thank you, Lynn. And I'm going to read 566 by Sri Sadhu Om. Uh-oh, here's a word I don't know how to say. Quiescence, maybe? Temporary, I know it means quiet. Temporary quiescence of the mind is temporary quiescence of misery. And permanent destruction of the mind is permanent destruction of misery. That is, the mind itself is misery. Hence, let us find out what is to be done to destroy the mind. So again, with the word mind here, he's really talking about that individual will, that individual I, that individual me, mine, and my way. And he's saying if you can, you know, get that to settle down, to be quiet, to not speak for a temporary period of time, you will be very happy. In fact, as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, some girls and I went hiking this weekend, and some of the people had been hiking before, but some had not been. And, you know, what I heard over and over was what a marvelous experience, you know, hiking is, because when you're hiking, you're so in the now, you're paying attention to the flowers and the waterfalls and the views and even your breathing, because we were at very high altitudes, you're paying attention to your breathing, and the stories that usually run in their minds, they just weren't present. They were temporarily quiet. And so there was joy. You know, and the belief might be that hiking makes me happy. But it's not true. It's just that, you know, during that act of hiking, because you're so in the now with that amazing beauty around you, your mind is temporarily quiet, and so you are happy. That misery that the mind causes is not present in the moment, and your natural happiness arises. But, you know, when that happens because of something like hiking, well, the hike ends, the long weekend ends, we go back to our regular life, and all the regular stuff is there, job, spouse, children, you know, bills, and the mind starts talking again and the misery comes back. You know, this often happens with people when they go to spiritual retreats as well. They'll go on a spiritual retreat, and, you know, what is happening at the spiritual retreat is so amazingly inspirational. And they're so focused on what is happening at the retreat, and the mind is quiet for a time, and there's just so much happiness there. And then they come back to, you know, whatever their regular life is, and the mind comes back and the misery comes back. Yeah, spiritual retreat, vacation, you know, doing something that you really enjoy, a hobby. And so what Sadhu Om is saying is that, you know, when this happens, of course, you know, there's this happiness that's there because the misery is temporarily gone. But it is going to come back. And so if you want the permanent destruction of misery, you want to find out how to permanently destroy the mind. Or, you know, said another way, since not everyone loves the word destroy, or many people misinterpret the word destroy, I'll say it another way. You want to permanently learn how to not care about your mind. a 719 number. I don't know what to do. I'll be quiet for a moment, but it might go to the answering machine next. The funny thing is I don't know how to make it so it goes to the answering machine without making noise for us to hear. And I don't want to expose anybody's private thoughts that they didn't want shared. Okay, it's my daughter's teacher, principal, actually.
Welcome to our 2014-15
because school starts tomorrow here.
Our first day for all of our students is tomorrow, Monday, August the 11th, beginning at 7:30, first hour.
Yeah, I have no way to turn down the volume. We'll just have to be patient.
Amidst our construction in various phases.
Oh, wait, there it goes down a little bit.
We have a completed new classroom addition, and we have phases around the building just getting underway. As a result, I need to ask for your help. If you drive to school, please park in either the dirt lot in front of the temporary main entrance or the paved lot in front of our school. Parents, to the front of the school.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stop it. I think I can. There. I won't get the rest of the message now, but that's okay. I don't need it. She's talking about buses and stuff, and Jasmine doesn't ride buses. So what I was talking about a moment ago, again, is if the mind is temporarily quiet, right, then the misery is temporarily not present and we experience joy. And what we often do is we say, I am happy because, hiking makes me happy, or bike riding makes me happy, or making love makes me happy, or cooking makes me happy, or gardening makes me happy. But that's not true. We're experiencing our natural happiness because the mind is temporarily quiet, because of our being in the now. And so Sadhu Om is saying, if it's really the mind being quiet that allows us to know our natural happiness, then what we should really all seek is, how can we destroy the mind permanently? And again, the word destroy, not everyone loves, but I would say, how can we get to where we permanently lose interest in the mind, where it just doesn't mean anything. It has no meaning. And if the mind has no meaning, if the me, mine, and my way thoughts have no meaning, then they don't have the power to block our natural joy. And so what we experience is our natural joy. And it doesn't matter whether we're hiking or cooking or riding our bike or making love or solving a problem, dealing with, an upset person, cleaning out mud out of a house that is flooded. It just doesn't matter. Because it never was the situation that made us happy or unhappy. It always was whether our mind was active or not. And, our active mind is active only because we give it attention and we value it. We believe it. We're interested in it. So if we begin to lose interest in our mind, not give meaning to its stories, it's not being fed, and so it grows weaker and weaker, and it dies. And when it dies, we are happy, because there is no mind. What's wrong, my love? Jamie's crying. What's wrong, Sweetie? All right, so let's look at the journal for 566 and see what I wrote. Do not be satisfied with a little time of peace during moments of contemplation and meditation. Practice the practices given by wisdom, those that arise when the mind is quiet, and follow that practice into the complete cessation of mind. So what happens for me is that, in the morning when I am in contemplation, hello, my love. In the morning when I am in contemplation, my thinking mind is not there. It has no place in contemplation, and it's not present. And so when I'm in contemplation, there's just this deep, deep, deep devotional love, joy. Now, Danielle's asking what's the matter with Jamie. But, you know, what this is saying to me is don't be satisfied with that little bit of deep devotional love, joy, that you know, I don't know how to put words to the magnificence of the love, joy that comes during contemplation. But don't be satisfied with that little bit, that 2 hours every day. Every day when I'm in contemplation, something comes. I call it my daily bread. Something comes, a practice for the day. To sit there in that joy and to write down that practice and then to get up and walk away and never go back to it, never practice it, never reflect on it. That's being satisfied with a little when I could have a lot. So again, what this is saying is do not be satisfied with the little bit of joy that comes when the mind is quiet during contemplation. Take what comes and practice it throughout the day, every day. Take that daily bread each day and practice it fully, vigilantly, each day, until there is no mind at all. And that deep, deep devotional love joy that is experienced when there's no mind in contemplation becomes the only experience because there is no mind. Again, number 566 in the journal says, do not be satisfied with a little time of peace during moments of contemplation and meditation. Practice the practices given by wisdom. Those that arise when the mind is quiet, and follow that practice into the complete cessation of mind. And I'm going to scroll now down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 567. And I will read number 567 from the Seven Steps to Awakening, Sri Sadhu Om. This is a little longer, but I'll read it slowly for you. When self, our nature of existence, consciousness, instead of shining only as the pure consciousness I am, shines mixed with an adjunct as I am a man, I am Rama, I am so-and-so, I am this or that, then this mixed consciousness is the ego. This mixed consciousness can rise only by catching hold of a name and form. When we feel, I am a man, I am Rama, I am sitting, I am lying, is it not clear that we have mistaken the body for I, and that we have assumed its name and postures as I am this, and I am thus? One thing that I really love about this is Sri Sadhu Om refers to this mixed shining as ego. He says that when our nature, which is existence, consciousness, pure consciousness, I am, becomes mixed with an adjunct idea like I am a man, I am a woman, I am fat, I am thin, I am healthy, I am sick, I am smart, I am stupid, I am good, I am bad. The add-on. He says, that's ego. So what that kind of reminds me of as I read that is it kind of reminds me of a light. You have a light shining and it's pure light. And then you put like a lens over it, a colored lens. And the light now, maybe if it's a bluish lens, the light now has a bluish tint to it. And it's mixed, right? It's shining forth now as a blue light. because of the add-on of the lens, the blue lens. And he says, again, this mixed state is ego. And one thing I love about that is because that's kind of what I teach when I'm in the True Discernment course, when I'm talking about purification. You know, the word purification itself scares a lot of people. But I tell them that all purification is moving from mixed back to pure, back to that pure light, pure consciousness, pure I am. So we're letting go of everything that is the adjunct or the add-on. That's what purification is. It's letting go of everything that is added on to I am, added on to isness, moving from mixed back to pure. Purification. And that's not scary at all. There's nothing scary about that. It's just a matter of noticing all of the things that we've added and believed in. When self, our nature of existence consciousness, instead of shining only as the pure consciousness I am, shines mixed with an adjunct as I am man, or I am Rama, or I am so-and-so, or I am this or that, then this mixed consciousness is ego. Let's go ahead and look and see what I wrote in the journal as I contemplated this. Identifying with is a function of mind used to create an apparent being by identifying life with an idea or apparent object. In truth, there is no identification. You know, life, I love that word life. I love the word isness, but I also love the word life. You know, if you are out in nature like I was this weekend and you look around, you can see life everywhere, right? There's just life in everything. There's abundant life. Now, it appears to have many different forms. Some of the life shows up as trees. Some of the life shows up as the hikers. Some of the life shows up as their dogs. Some of the life shows up as the wildflowers. Some of the life shows up as the clouds. Some of the life shows up as the water in the waterfalls. Some of the life shows up as the insects that you experience, right? But there's just life everywhere. But instead of looking out on life and saying, ah, life, we say hiker, dog, insect, flower. And of course, then we do other things like, I like flowers, I do not like insects. You know, we add judgment to all of that. And in this, the idea of life, just life itself, it somehow gets lost in all of this identification. Especially when we have the identification of this is me and that is not me. I am not that person. I am not that dog, I am not that insect, I am not that tree, I am not that flower, I am not that water. We take life, which is everywhere, and we name it, we say this is that, and so this is life, this is that, and divide it, and then we say this one is me and that one is not me, and truth is hidden. Although it's incredibly apparent and incredibly abundant, it is also hidden in all of our ideas of identification, what that is and what I am. Again, Sadhu Om said, when self, our nature of existence consciousness, instead of shining only as pure consciousness I am, shines mixed with an adjunct as I am man, I am Rama, I am so-and-so, I am this or that, then this mixed consciousness is the ego. And as my journal says, identifying with is a function of mind used to create an apparent being, or we could call this an apparent separation, by identifying life with an idea or apparent object. In truth, there is no identification. And, of course, anyone who's read Eckhart Tolle knows that Eckhart Tolle is, always asking us to let go of identifying everything that we see. And this is why. It's not because it's bad to know the difference between a tree and a banana. It's because, we want to let go of seeing things as things instead of seeing life. And knowing life. And knowing life as what I am and what everything is. There's really only one life. There's really only one life. And in order to realize there really is only one life, we need to let go of our identification of, what that is and what that is and what I am. I'm going to scroll down underneath 567, and I'm going to click on 568. And we are moving now from Sri Sadhu Om to Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And the first Nisargadatta quote, number 568, is very short. Now, he says, "As to my mind, there is no such thing." As to my mind, there is no such thing. And of course, if you've been here with me the whole hour, then you know earlier in the hour, I kind of gave us a definition of mind to work with. And the definition was, yes, Kathy is writing it out, my. Yeah, the definition of mind was me, mine, my way, right? And that's a very firm identification, right? If I say my way is this, I am separating myself from you immediately. I'm saying I am this, my way is this, you are not me, right? It's a very strong separation that occurs. And Nisargadatta is saying, as to my mind, right, his I thought, his, me, his, my way, his, mine, all these thoughts and ideas and identifications. He's saying, as to my mind, there is no such thing. There is no such thing. Bliss. Bliss. Now, a lot of people can't understand that. People will say, well, how can you talk? How can you talk if you don't have a mind? Well, the mind as a tool can remain present for the light to shine through. Without the personal mind existing, without the I, me, mine, my way, the teachings of Inner Ramana, let's see if I have it here. The teachings of Inner Ramana opens up with a really interesting discussion. The very first message is called Commentary on Mind. And one of the paragraphs in that message says, mind cannot be ignored entirely. Mind is like a tool that must be used if one is to experience this world in any way. Mind is the tool of perception. Perception can only be experienced through mind. But this is not the same as saying that mind controls perception or that one must listen to the chattering or problems and solutions of mind. Think of mind as a filter. This filter enables one to see objects where there is light. This filter enables one to distinguish differences where there are none. It enables one to communicate using symbols that represent something else. Without the mind, one would be unable to experience the world. But this does not mean that one must be subject to the mind. The mind, when believed and taken seriously, seems to define reality. But as I have just shown, the mind does not define reality. It places a veil of perception over reality, so reality can be experienced in a new way. This means that mind is a trickster or illusionist, and that which it creates is purely illusion. To believe the mind is to believe illusion. To think illusion is reality is to be completely deluded. What that says to me is, mind was created so that there could be an experience of hiking and enjoying flowers and enjoying trees and enjoying conversations with friends. But an experience does not have to be believed to be truth. An experience can be experienced and enjoyed while truth is simultaneously realized. And what's even stronger in our perception is that these flowers are life. I am life. This friend is life. This tree is life. This air I breathe is life. And when we can have this experience of form with the clarity, the realization of truth, the experience of form is joy. But if we forget the truth and we believe the form and we believe the ideas of separation and we believe the me and the mine and the my way, the joy is covered up by mind. One way A Course in Miracles words this, which is really wonderful. Oh, I like Michael is referring to the voice message I got a little bit ago from Jasmine's principal, but he's changing it a little bit. He says, "Dear parents, school will be starting tomorrow. If you would like your student taught via the mind, please park in the left parking lot. If you would like your student taught via that which is beyond the mind, please park in the right parking lot. Thank you for your cooperation." I was going to say, and this fits kind of with Michael's writing. I was going to say that one thing I love about A Course in Miracles is A Course in Miracles talks about the interpreters. It says we have two interpreters. One, it calls the wrong mind, which would be like the left parking lot. And one, it calls the right mind, which would be like the right parking lot. And what A Course in Miracles is asking us to do is to let go of believing the wrong mind. Let go of listening to the wrong mind. But it leaves us with the right mind, an interpreter. That interpreter is mind as merely a tool, mind as merely a filter. So that interpreter can still look at life, God, isness, nothingness, everythingness, consciousness, awareness, and distinguish cup, pen, person, so that the experience of form can happen. But at the same time, the right mind has no belief. The right mind looks at cup, picks up cup, and knows it's picking up life, life picking up life. The right mind drinks from cup, tastes what's in the cup, and knows it's life tasting life. And there's a richerness in this. In fact, I think somewhere in NTI it says that there's a line that's very similar to something like God, which is richness, wanted to enrich in itself. God, which is richness, wanted to enrich itself. And so it extended itself and created you, form, in this case, which means you are enrichment itself. There's an enriching experience in the ability to experience through mind and have this experience of form without a belief in mind, with a clear awareness that it is all life, all God, all isness, all awareness, all consciousness. And that's what the right mind, the interpreter of right mind, does. But what Inner Ramana is saying is that without any interpreter, without any mind, there would be no experience of cup, no experience of person, no experience of tea, not a wrong-minded experience or a right-minded experience. There would be no experience at all. So mind is a tool that enables the experience. The problem comes in when mind is identified with, when mind is believed. But if it's just experienced through with absolute clarity, there is joy. Okay, we only have 3 minutes left. Let me read Nisargadatta again, and then we'll go to my journal. Nisargadatta says, as to my mind, there is no such thing. All right? So my journal says, there is no mind. This is the strictest sense of truth. But as long as mind appears to be, do not deny it. Instead, be attentive in not believing it. Attentive in focusing attention on self, non-mind self. And again, mind in this case is the personal I, me, my way, my problems, my ideas, my thoughts, my solutions, my worries, my concerns, just all that noise. So there is no such thing as mind. It's just this collection of thoughts. And there's no reason that we need to listen to them. And they can grow weaker and vanish if we don't. And so what we can do is, instead of listening to all of this blah, 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 and giving it meaning and making it valuable, we can just pay attention to the heart, pay attention to the before mind, pay attention to the stillness, be moved by the intuition. Live with the no mind, which is also present, which could be called the right mind or the right-minded interpreter. And let that wrong mind, that noisy mind, thinking mind, personal mind, let it go. It's not necessary. It's not needed. You know, when people will say, well, how do I know what to do if I don't use the mind? You'll be amazed. You'll know. What you're really cutting out is the thinking for weeks and weeks and weeks about what you're going to do in 2 months. You're just living and being now. And when 2 months now comes and there's something you are to do, in that moment you'll know what to do. That thinking mind, that personal mind, that deciding mind, that weighing mind, that comparing mind, it's not necessary. And it's the cause of your misery. And so as long as it remains apparently present, our practice is to practice not listening to it, not believing it, letting it go. And instead, pay attention to the heart, awareness, isness, before mind. All right, that's enough for now. I'm going to go, and as I mentioned, I have a board meeting, so I'll go to my board meeting, and hopefully I will be back at 10, and we can look at today's daily quote from Magdi. And if I'm not here, it's just because the board meeting ran a little bit over. All right, everyone. Take care. Love.